Hello, and welcome back to Tales from Wisteria Lane, the podcast where we give you a fair view of all things Desperate Housewives. We are the boyfriends. I'm Billy Ray.
And I'm Joel.
And in today's episode, we're doing Season 7, Episode 3, Truly Content. And in this one, I will be leading, and Joel's going to give us some trivia, some fun facts. Yeah. What do you have to start us off with?
So, this episode aired on the 10th of October, 2010, and it was directed by Tara Nicole Weir, who is a new director for the show. We've not had her.
Welcome to the team.
Welcome to the show, Tara. She does two more episodes in season 8, and that's it. The episode was written by Matthew Berry. In this episode, it is confirmed that Lynette and Tom's new baby is named Paige, not Polly.
Oh, really? I didn't even take that in.
No. And it could be that Paige was actually mentioned in episode 1 or 2 of season 7. I don't remember. So the title of this episode comes from a song of the same name in the Stephen Sondheim musical Passionella.
Oh, I haven't heard of that one.
No, that's a new one to us.
It's awfully close to Salmonella.
Yeah. So this week's news. So the number one movie in the UK was Wall Street, Money Never Sleeps.
Okay.
Which was the sequel to Wall Street, which came out in like the 80s. The US number one song was Just The Way You Are by Bruno Mars, and the UK number one song was Forget You by CeeLo Green.
Cool.
So what happened this week in the world? So the world's oldest known high-altitude human settlement, estimated to be 49,000 years old, is uncovered near Kokoda, Papua New Guinea.
Cool.
Jonathan Evans, who's head of Britain's MI5, gives a rare interview disclosing details of his love of classics and calling for wider availability of Latin and Greek in schools as, he claims, they are useful for spies.
Because they're useful for spies?
Yeah.
Okay.
Robert Geoffrey Edwards of the United Kingdom wins the Nobel Prize in Physiology or Medicine for his role in developing in vitro fertilization. Researchers identify a new, though threatened, language known as Koro. The Bank of Japan lowers interest rates in Japan to a range of between 0 and 0.1%.
Fierce.
Like, what the fuck? UK Prime Minister David Cameron is forced to issue an apology to his own voters after breaking an election promise by withdrawing child benefits from 1.2 million of them.
Well, at least he apologised. We don't even get that anymore.
Right. A Sky News satellite truck is attacked by elements of the far-right English Defence League as four frightened members of the news team lock themselves inside.
Oh God, okay.
110 people are injured and 200 people are arrested as anti-gay protesters and police clash in Belgrade at Serbia's first gay pride parade event since 2001.
Oh dear.
A celebration occurs as a male British child turns 10 at 10:10 on the 10th day of the 10th month of 2010.
Okay, so everyone had nothing better to do. Okay.
Yeah. Couples around the world rush to get married as the 10th of October 2010 is seen as auspicious, especially in Chinese culture.
Oh God, okay.
And the Equality and Human Rights Commission releases a 700-page report condemning Britain as a land where discrimination and disadvantage are rife.
Well, there you go.
On the Sunday, the 10th of October, My Little Pony, Friendship is Magic premieres and creates a whole new genre of people, bronies.
Yeah, a subset of fandom, so to speak.
Yeah.
You know, I don't really know anything about bronies.
Neither do I.
But I don't see any reason to research them because they don't come up in the show.
They're men who love My Little Pony. I did a little bit of trivia on switching at birth. Because there's quite obviously, that's a heavy storyline for this season.
You did not.
Is switching at birth. What?
Okay, what have you got? What?
So 1 out of 4 million total births are switched, which equals to about 28,000 babies a year.
Damn, Gabby and Carlos. Switched. Those are some unlucky statistics that you got.
Yeah. Overall, this translates to about one mistake per every 1,000 baby transfers. So the good news is that many of these mistakes are being caught at some point before families leave the hospital. However, there are still risks associated with these transfers that still need to be resolved. So, some facts about baby switching. During a 2-day stay at the hospital, babies are switched on average 6 times. To prevent mistakes, hospitals are going beyond the bracelet identification system to encourage parent-child bonding so recognition can occur. And new bracelets are being developed that will alert hospital staff to an identification mismatch as and when it occurs. From 1995 to 2008, only 8 occurrences of baby switching were documented in the United States. There's no mandate for hospitals in the United States to report data about baby switching when it occurs, although the Joint Commission that monitors hospitals suggests that it should be done.
Well, at least they suggest it.
Right. Some estimates say that 1 out of every 8 babies are given to the wrong parent at some point during their hospital stay, with some high-capacity hospitals being closer to 1 in 4. And up to 18 babies per year are switched and sent home with the wrong families, although most of these issues are immediately corrected within a few days.
Those statistics are still higher than I would have expected.
And higher than I'd like to read as well. I don't really want to, like, terrify people at having babies. But these are just some statistics to keep in mind.
Well, if you're a male and a female couple, the man doesn't really do very much. Get them to go check that the right baby's going to the right place.
No, because the man won't recognise the bloody baby. Babies, no offence.
They don't need to recognise the baby. They just need to follow the baby and make sure that it's that particular one.
Yeah, but once it gets put in the room with all the other babies, then what?
Well, he's watching to see where it goes.
Yeah, but you can't stand there forever and just watch that one bed. That man will eventually wander off and come back, and at that point he's not going to have any clue what baby's what in what bed, because all babies look the same.
I have a solution. We pierce their ears with different coloured earrings.
We've already got the bracelet system.
Which wasn't working, so you pierce their ears.
Absolutely not. And that's all my trivia.
Okay then. So previously, Susan became a webcam lingerie model for a soft porn site called Va 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 Broom, which she started to get really into. Renee rented Edie's old house across the road from Lynette. Carlos told Gabby that their daughter was switched at birth. Paul Young revealed that he's married to the neighbour of the season, Beth. And Tom came home and told Lynette that he has postpartum depression.
Mm.
And we're going to start with Lynette and Tom. So Tom is depressed, and Lynette has tried to cheer him up with food, humour, and sex, which is a nice improvement from the previous episode.
Yeah.
But eventually she insists that he goes to see the doctor. Unfortunately, this leads to medication, and Lynette worries about what the drugs will do. Tom seems adamant about using this doctor's prescription, but Lynette convinces him to try Susan's doctor, who prescribes more herbal remedies. This leads to Tom coming home with marijuana, and typical Lynette isn't happy about this either, because there's no pleasing the woman. She just wants him to get over it.
Yeah, well, I don't blame Lynette for being hesitant about the original prescription he got.
Mm.
Because the medical industry in America is messed up, and there are doctors out there that prescribe for the sake of prescribing.
Yes.
And that's worldwide as well. We have that doctors prescribe for the sake of prescribing to get the person out of the office or to get them out of there.
Oh, well, yeah, they're underfunded and the rooms are overcrowded.
Yeah. But in America, when you have a private healthcare system and you don't have a public healthcare, you do get companies that will do what they can to make sure that their products are pushed more than others.
Yeah, you'd think that this is the kind of condition that requires some therapy first.
Yeah.
Before you decide to go to medication.
Exactly.
You know, this particular episode has aged very much in this storyline.
Yeah.
Because of people's attitudes towards marijuana use.
Mm.
Hilariously, in Lynette's next scene, Tom seems to already be a pretty typical stoner, even though he hasn't actually had any marijuana yet. He's got headphones playing Pink Floyd, he's got indoor sunglasses, and he's just taken every single snack that he can find from the kitchen. He tries to convince Lynette to join him for a little doobage. That was a quote. And Lynette is upset that he isn't taking this seriously, and she's worried what the kids will think. Unfortunately, when he leaves the room, she proceeds to wash his weed down the sink and replace it with herbs.
Isn't this possibly dangerous?
What, to replace someone's weed with herbs?
Yeah.
I'm not sure.
I don't know.
I don't know what it would do to the body if you smoked herbs.
Yeah, oregano. Like, or oregano. Oregano? What the hell? Plus, like, Lynette's so judgy in this scene, it really irritates me. Like, let Tom experience this for the first time. Yes,
she
he's
really
being...
is so judgy, isn't she? What will the kids think?
He's being so overdramatic and slightly annoying, but that's just because he doesn't know what to expect. Let this poor grown-ass man experience doobage for the first time.
Yeah. Tom comes back into the house and tells Lynette that he is absolutely wasted. And Lynette starts making fun of him, waving her hands in his face. And Tom seems to think that everything is trippy as fork. Lynette starts responding to Tom just by saying random words in a sentence. And then Tom tells her that he feels super lucky to have such a beautiful daughter after seeing her sleeping. So there's clearly a placebo effect going on here, and it's all working very well.
Yeah, Lynette's lucky that Tom has never smoked weed before in his life, so he's got no idea what to expect, because this wouldn't have worked otherwise.
He's not acting like he's smoked weed. He's acting like he's taken some LSD.
Yeah.
What is he doing?
And this is, like, I want to know how many bloopers there are of this scene.
Right, Lynette just saying random words.
I bet there are some bloopers out there of the two of them doing this scene.
Right.
Snow shovel.
Now, personally, I don't agree with pouring people's prescribed medications into the sink.
No.
I think it's extremely judgy, and Lynette is being a royal... She's been a nasty, nasty girl. we'll play that sting.
What a bitch.
Yeah, and although Lynette seems to have her reasons, and those reasons are kind of just sort of glossed over and forgiven by the end of their storyline. These last two episodes have not been good episodes for Lynette.
No, it's getting to the point in the show where you're actually becoming more of a
Tom supporter.
Tom's side.
Yeah.
So Tom approaches Carlos, who's looking really depressed, and offers to relieve him of some stress with a hand on his shoulder. And although most people would assume that Tom is offering to give Carlos a copy, he's actually offering him some medicinal marijuana.
Tom's turning himself into a drug dealer, which isn't cool.
Well, he's turning himself into a free drug dealer.
Yeah.
He's like, have some for free, it'll be fun. However, when Carlos comes over to try some, he tells Tom that it isn't weed, it's oregano.
Yeah.
Like, he just smells it and he's instantly like, that's oregano.
The only thing that's getting baked off of this is lasagna.
I love that he knows that, but it says a lot about Tom that he doesn't know what any food herbs smell like. It's a major herb.
Considering that Tom used to own a pizza place,
he should know what oregano smells like.
Oregano. Like, come on.
He then realizes that Lynette must have done this, which she acts dumb to at first, but then she just says, yeah, that was me, and claims that it's actually a little funny.
It's so embarrassing. Tom did this in front of Carlos, you know, the cool husband. Carlos is the cool one.
Tom is upset, and I would say rightly so.
Yeah.
But Lynette just keeps making fun and defends herself, saying how the placebo effect completely worked. But I also did think it was quite funny, so I'm kind of like, I see both sides.
I do see both sides. And even, like, Lynette is there like, you thought you were getting higher for pizza topping. Like, it's a little funny. Like, and it is a little funny, but from an outsider's perspective, it's hilarious. And in 10 years, Tom and Lynette will tell this story and laugh and laugh and laugh about it. But as Tom, this is not funny.
And then the kids will be like, so you just threw away a whole tub of medical marijuana and wasted how much money?
Yeah.
Wow. She makes some good points, even though it really is just a load of old crap. And she then apologizes for what she did. And Tom then goes to look at their beautiful daughter. And this seems to be the end of the whole marijuana saga.
Yeah, and Lynette does make some good points. You know, the placebo effect was a real thing for Tom. Tom proved to himself that he didn't technically need the weed to learn to love his daughter and get over whatever issues he may be carrying. But that doesn't make what Lynette did right.
No, of
the
course not.
The ends do not justify the means.
No, of course not. And that, what a waste of money.
Yeah.
A whole tub of marijuana just down the sink.
And what a waste of a writing opportunity. Like, you literally wrote in this storyline and wrote it off straight away.
Yeah, we didn't actually need a resolution that he found out it wasn't weed so soon.
No, and like, but it's just, I don't care that he found out the same episode. What I care about is the fact that he was so angry, and then Lynette was like, yeah, but I did it for this reason. And then Tom's like, yeah, you're right.
Yeah, he's not like, you know, that's a really shitty thing to do, Lynette.
Yeah.
Oh, well.
Like, they could have really built upon that, because there's a Tom and Lynette storyline coming up, and obviously it does, I guess this does factor into that storyline in the future, even though it's not specifically said that this is a factor of it. But it could they could have used it to build it up even better.
Yeah.
And they missed the trick here, is what I'm getting at.
Now let's move on to Bree's story. Keith is showing Bree her newly decorated lounge, but she really seems to hate the yellow.
I really liked it.
I like the yellow.
I thought it, you know, it was a tad banana. I'll give it that. But it really did make Bree's hair stand out. So Keith was right there.
Yeah, and in a lounge where it's going to be sunny, that's going to be so bright. It's going to be lovely.
Yeah.
Keith convinces her that it looks great though, and no one is going to be looking at the walls anyway, and he's flirting.
He is definitely flirting.
Renee then knocks on the door and tells her that they're both getting divorced and so they should go out together to pick up men. But Bree is happy as she's managed to almost pick up a man just by sitting at home.
Right, and then Renee's there like, beautiful, classy, and can get a man sitting at home. Just when I thought we could be friends.
Yeah, I do love that Renee has come over and thought, I'm going to be friends with this woman. We have something in common right now.
Bree and Renee hanging out and being each other's wingwomen, like, that's a storyline I didn't even realise I wanted at the time.
Right.
And then I got it, and I was like, oh my god, Marsha Cross and what's her name? I've forgotten the actress's name.
Vanessa Williams.
Thank you. Marsha Cross and Vanessa Williams, like, yes please.
Right, the writers were onto something there.
Yeah, they were.
So Keith is enjoying one of Bree's homemade sandwiches with homemade mustard.
Right, she makes her own mustard.
When his girlfriend Stephanie shows up.
Girlfriend, like, no!
Right. So Bree's thrown off by how young and pretty the woman is and decides not to ask him out to dinner, as she was actually intending to do. And she then goes over to Renee's and agrees to go out for drinks with her.
Of course you've got a girlfriend who's young and pretty.
He really shouldn't have been flirting with her if he had a girlfriend.
No, but his girlfriend is rather pretty. Yeah. She was quite pretty, so which is annoying. Yeah. So annoying. Poor Brie.
Yeah, she is really pretty. So Renee goes over to Brie's and, you know, to go out for the night, but she seems upset with what Brie is wearing, even if Brie does defend her cocktail cardigan with its shiny buttons.
There's no such thing as a cocktail cardigan.
No, there's not. But we have a clip, so let's play it.
Hey there, I'm ready to party.
Are you? Because you look like you're ready to tour the Reagan Library.
This is a cocktail cardigan. Look closely, the buttons are shiny.
Where's your closet? I have never seen so many sweater sets. Are you sure this is a closet and not a portal to the 1950s?
There is nothing wrong with my clothing.
Brie, you're going to a hot young club full of hot young people. You need to dress the part.
Well, I happen to find it distasteful when mutton is dressed as lamb.
Look, when women go out clubbing, there's two ways they can pair up. Pretty girl, pretty girl, or pretty girl, grenade. Which do you want to be?
So according to Google, there are some places that do reference cocktail cardigans, but I'm sorry, I just don't believe it. I don't believe that cocktail cardigans are a legitimate item of clothing.
I don't know why I find that line so funny when she says, I have never seen so many sweater sets. And they do show a lot of different colourful jumpers.
They really do. It's like looking at Bee's wardrobe.
Yeah.
Yeah. He even picked up an item of clothing yesterday when we were out and he said, look, I could be awesome.
Yeah, but I didn't actually like that jumper very much.
Oh, bullshit. You loved it. Don't lie.
I did not.
You did.
They are at the club and Renee hates it, saying that it's completely dead, much to Bree's surprise, who thinks that it's packed.
Yeah.
They then spot Keith across the bar and Renee decides to make a move. Brie laughs about this with the bartender, who tells her that Keith just got dumped recently, and so Brie decides to turn her dress around so that the slit on the back now becomes a cleavage slit, lets her hair down, and tries it on with Keith. At least that's the plan.
She looks hot.
Although, you can tell that that's not supposed to be the front of the dress, because the boob-revealing triangle moment is all, like, fluffy, and it just looks a bit odd. But she looks great.
What I find interesting is that the back of the dress has a slit, even though it's technically the front of the dress.
Yeah. Are we sure that's not actually the front of the dress anyway?
I think it's a different dress.
I mean, it is Brie. She probably saw that and was like, yeah, that's definitely the back.
Yeah.
The back is modest, right? Like, the front is modest, the back is out. That's okay. Mm-hmm. He does see her, but unfortunately, he ends up leaving with Renee. Brie is now in her front yard and calls Keith to say that there's an emergency, and then she breaks all of her sprinklers with a golf club.
Such a power play.
This is the same night. Keith then comes over and says he wasn't doing anything special, which I think is just rude, to be honest.
It really is.
Wasn't doing anything special when you're about to do Vanessa Williams.
I mean, this is such a power play. Brie calls Keith and she's like, I'm having a bit of an emergency. Can you come over? And then Keith's like, obviously on the other end of the line, saying, sure, whatever. And then she just throws her phone on the floor and then golfs the sprinklers, so the water comes shooting out. So this bitch has so much money, she can buy a new phone, pay for the excessive water bill, and buy new sprinklers.
Yeah, I have to say, though, it's a desperate moment. It's a powerful moment, but my God, the fact that she's willing to do this to Renee, who she's only just become friends with.
Yeah.
But I don't think she likes Renee very much.
No, I think she tolerates Renee. It's the same as Edie. None of the women really liked Edie. They kind of tolerated her.
Yeah. So the next day, Renee comes over to Bree's and tells her, no one steals a man from my bed, before starting war with Brie. She openly just initiates a war.
It's officially World War Brie.
Saying that she looks forward to bringing her down. And Brie responds with, I look forward to it. And as we know, Brie's a dangerous girl.
I'm a dangerous girl.
She is a dangerous girl.
So, I mean, Renee is obviously going to be a dangerous girl. It's Vanessa Williams.
Yeah.
But maybe be careful. Tread lightly, Renee. Tread lightly.
Why Renee?
Because Brie's a dangerous girl.
But so is Renee.
Yeah, but we haven't seen much of Renee yet, but we know what Brie can do.
Yeah.
We've seen her shoot the top of a van off of it with a shotgun from a distance.
That was true. Why did she do that? Oh, that was George, wasn't it?
Because George was annoying her.
That was George
singing.
So she
destroyed part of his van.
Yeah, that was George singing.
But you know, I think that maybe she might have met her match.
And they could be really good friends as well. Like, they're both classy, they're both sassy, they're both beautiful.
I got the vibe that it's going to be a love-hate relationship, not just a hate-hate relationship. So yeah. I guess we'll have to find out. So that was my favourite story of the episode, personally.
Okay. Mm.
And now we must move on to Susan's. So Susan is doing a bit of the lingerie cleaning on camera stuff and giving her best corny talk of all time.
Oh my god, it was cringe. It could not have been more cringe, this porn audio. It was done so well. Because everyone knows the audio in porn is cringe.
Yeah, and Terry Hatcher is good at just being the clumsy, goofy one.
Yeah.
She then, and I air quotes, accidentally vacuums off her apron and then signs off the website by pushing her breasts against the webcam and hitting the off button.
I better sign off before I'm completely naked.
So she's gotten really into it.
She really has.
Maxine then comes over to praise Susan for her improvements and gives her the bonus for the woman with the most hits in a month. And she even beats Stacey Strauss, who apparently has the best ass.
Right, I love the way Maxine talks. Mm. I find it so utterly charming. She's there like, oh, I quelled. Like, oh my god, it's so charming. Oh, you just unseated Stacey Strauss and with a caboose on her, that ain't easy. Like, oh, it's so charming just listening to her talk.
Yeah, she's wonderful. Susan and Mike's anniversary is coming up, and she convinces him to go out to a nice restaurant for the occasion, although he doesn't think it's a great idea at first because money.
Yeah.
Mike then leaves the room, which is a communal laundrette, by the way, and Susan is left alone with Stacey Strauss, who we heard about earlier.
Who looks fabulous.
Who accuses Susan of stealing her moves to get the big bonus check.
Yeah.
Susan says that she doesn't watch the other girls, but Stacey leaves the room and tells Susan to watch her back.
Right. She looks very Shania Twain.
Yeah.
Stacey Strauss gives me very Shania Twain vibes. I'm not sure if it's part of the accent as well, because she's clearly got that very southern... She's got the southern twang as Miss Stacey.
This is a gorgeous ginger lady.
It really is. And she's there like, you expect me to believe that you just woke up one day and wanted to put a feather duster in your mouth? Like, it's really not out of the realms of possibility that someone thinks of putting a feather duster in their mouth. Like, it's...
However, I'm assuming it's the handle.
Maybe, why?
Because you shouldn't put any other part of a feather duster in your mouth.
Oh, well, yeah.
Please be the handle.
Yeah, I thought you meant like the tip. So she was like, you can't see me, guys, but I'm...
I'm hoping it's not the duster part. That'd no. be disgusting.
Yeah, no, I imagine it's like the side part of the handle.
No, I get what you mean. I think it's desperation. I think Stacey Strauss is a desperate housewife.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And she leaves saying, watch your back. Like, is this porn mob bosses or something?
Right, fierce. So Susan goes into Maxine's while she's on the phone to grab her pay. Maxine points her to the other room, which has monitors set up showing all of the ladies on the website, and she sees Stacey Strauss using her vacuum apron bit.
And she looks an awkward mess as well, just like to point out.
Who's Stacey?
Stacey, in that video thing, she looked like an awkward mess.
First time doing the vacuum bit in it.
Yeah.
Angrily, she takes the spare keys from Maxine's wall and leaves, which is not a great sign.
No, it's not. In the scene, Maxine's getting all of the ladies meat. For Christmas.
Yeah, like fancy steaks.
Yeah.
She's on the phone to her meat guy.
Yeah. And she's like, oh, whatever meat you put in my stocking will be fine.
Right? My meat guy.
It's such a weird thing. Why Americans? Do you all have meat guys?
I guess when you want a really good steak, you go to your meat guy. You don't go to your local butcher's, you go to your meat guy.
You go to your meat guy.
So Stacey leaves her flat and Susan sneaks past to let herself in with the stolen keys. And this just feels like another moment where Susan hasn't thought this through.
No, it's really not. I mean, this is breaking and entering.
She finds the vacuum cleaner and pulls a screwdriver from her pocket. I think it was a flat, not Phillips. So we can assume that she fucks it up.
Why does it matter if it's a flat or a Phillips?
Because I'm macho. So she then sits at her laptop with a snack ready to enjoy the show and watches as Stacey tries to vacuum the vacuum bit, but she ends up with the vacuum shooting dust and dirt in her face instead, which is disgusting.
And Susan's out of her fucking popcorn. Ooh, I love this show.
It was funny, but it made me feel really gross. Like, the thought of the vacuum doing that to me.
Yeah, all of that dust and dirt and dead skin cells and...
Disgusting. You wouldn't get that smell or that taste out of your mouth and nose for weeks.
No.
She then turns on her own camera to do her show, and she makes it very obvious what she's done. She's like, for all of you who may be joining me...
Yeah,
she like,
makes it so obvious that she's the one that's done this.
Stacey then literally just busts her way into the flat, accuses Susan of tampering with her vacuum, and they start fighting.
And Susan calls her man hands.
Yeah, they get a bit catty.
They do get quite catty, yeah.
Maxine sees this on the monitor, and we then see both of the women saying that they need the bonus checks, and Maxine walks in to break them up. After finding out that it isn't just a bit, she only came over to be like...
You're off camera. Roll to the left. Yeah.
Yeah. Once Stacey leaves, Maxine says that they had so many hits when they were together on camera that they fried her router.
Stacey doesn't leave. She gets kicked out by Maxine. It's clear that Maxine favours Susan.
Yeah, but, it looks like she's just busted her way and started fighting when she's on camera, though.
Yeah.
Now, if these ladies are clever, they'll team up more often and split the check, right?
You would think, yeah. They fried her router.
The next day, Stacey sees Susan in the laundry room and apologises for her behaviour, saying that she isn't allowed back online until she apologises. Stacey says that she's saving up to move back home to her family in Virginia, but then says that she has a habit of buying nice things when Susan says about the TV and the clothes that she saw in her flat. But Susan does this too, as seen earlier when buying that new dress with Gabby in a Gabby scene later.
Yeah.
And so they make up. She then asks how long Stacey's been doing this for, and Stacey says 6 years, convincing Susan not to go out to that expensive restaurant. Mm-hmm. So she asks Mike if they can just stay in for their anniversary and save the money instead.
Yeah, which is a good idea.
Yeah.
6 years you've been doing this amateur porn.
Susan's learnt a valuable lesson about saving money in desperate situations.
Yeah. I mean, the amount of things that me and B have neglected to do because we've been so busy saving for a house.
Yeah. Exactly. Sometimes you just have to make that, I don't want to call it a sacrifice because it sounds so first world problem-y.
You have to make that decision. Sometimes you just have to make the decision on what is suitable on to spend your money on at that time.
Yeah, sometimes you got a budget.
Yeah.
So let's talk about Beth's story, the neighbor of the season.
Yeah.
The ladies, except for Gabby at this point, go over to Paul and Beth's to welcome them to the neighborhood. With Bree's baked goods and all, standard.
Yeah.
They invited also to play poker with them, which she seems to agree to. And then they very quickly leave when they see Paul Young just standing on the stairs behind her.
Yeah.
They literally hate the guy. Like, they cannot stand him.
Nobody can stand him. Beth seems to be the only one.
Paul then says that they were just being nosy, and he warns her to be wary of people on the lane. He convinces her to be friends with them, though, basically to spy on them.
Yeah, and in this scene... Obviously, Brie comes over with baked goods, muffins, because Brie always comes over with muffins, and she hands them to Beth. Beth puts them down. Paul comes over and starts unwrapping one of the muffins. You know, they come in the muffin cases. He starts taking one of the muffin cases off, and then instead of taking a bite out of the muffin, he just throws it back into the muffin basket and walks off.
Yeah, it's like a mic drop moment.
You psycho. You absolute... What the fuck, Paul? Don't just start playing with a muffin.
I kind of assumed he was going to do it to all of the muffins after he did that one, and then he just left. And yeah. I thought, what are you doing? Also, you've been in prison for years. Why would you not enjoy a homemade muffin from Brie?
Yeah. Paul, let's be honest here. Girl to girl, let's not act like the one thing you weren't missing off of this lane was Brie's cooking.
Beth is now at the poker game with the ladies, which also includes Renee now, which I like.
Yeah, nice.
And seems to be oversharing about her mum and how she'd kick out her boyfriends just as Beth was finding out their names.
And there'd be a new toothbrush on the nightstand.
Much to Susan's enjoyment, who tells Lynette to keep pouring the wine because Beth is cracking like an egg.
Really didn't take her long before she just snapped and told them everything.
Yeah, so in terms of spying and finding out about what the women are doing, she's kind of doing a terrible job, but she is doing a good job at opening up and becoming like a friend and seeming somewhat trustworthy, I suppose.
But she would not hold up well under torture behind enemy lines.
Absolutely not.
She would crack and tell them everything straight away. They wouldn't even need to waterboard her. They would bring out the towel and lay it on the side, ready for the waterboarding. And she'd be like, no, don't, please, I'll tell you.
Or everything. Or even they'll just be like, before we torture you, let's eat. And then they'll just give her some Chardonnay.
Yeah.
So they ask how she met Paul, and we have a clip.
So, Beth, how did you and Paul meet anyway?
Oh, I don't want to bore you.
We won't be bored. More Chardonnay?
I saw his picture in the paper during his trial, and there was just something about those eyes that spoke to me.
What about the headline? Arrested for murder. That didn't speak to you.
I'll admit, that gave me pause. But then we started corresponding, and I discovered what a wonderful man Paul really is. But hey, you can't help who you fall in love with, right? Paul's a real lady killer.
I really do love that line. I'll admit, that gave me pause.
She's got such good delivery. We always fucked up the plexiglass in that one.
I mean, most people, it wouldn't give them pause, it would give them stop. Like, that would be it.
That gave me pause, I will admit.
And Renee must be having a great time as an outsider, just watching this dynamic and being like, discovering more and more things about Paul and this whole drama.
Renee might also be good as an outsider for Beth as well, because Renee will have something to bond with Beth over if they do ever bond. And she might be able to see what the other ladies are like to other outsiders from an outsider's perspective.
So Beth comes across Karen McCluskey on the lane and runs up to her to ask why she doesn't go to the poker games. And apparently Karen is fond of hiding aces in her bra, and so she got banned for life.
Yeah, it's weird because she was at a few, and then we never saw her again and we never questioned it.
And now we know why.
Yeah.
She asks why the ladies on the lane don't like Paul. And even though Karen does try to get away by claiming that tells her anything.
She's like, I'm old. People don't tell me anything.
Beth eventually gets it out of Karen that everyone thinks that Paul murdered Martha Huber, saying that Felicia Tillman may be a few fingers short of a high five, but if she's crazy, they all are.
Yes.
I mean, she is crazy.
She is crazy.
I mean, she's a few fingers short of a high five for a very particular reason. She is crazy. But she's not crazy about this.
I don't get why Beth doesn't know this.
Yeah, she must know.
I won't say anything because I don't want to spoil future storylines for anyone that may be watching along with us.
This scene makes no sense.
But this scene does make no sense, and it will all become apparent why very soon. But why Beth doesn't know about Martha still really doesn't sit well with me.
Yeah, in retrospective, this scene makes absolutely no sense as to why she's asking this question. So Beth is serving up sandwiches for her and Paul, and he asks what everyone is saying about him. She mentions that everyone thinks that he called Martha Huber, he continues to defend himself.
Even though she doesn't pronounce it Huber, she's like, everyone thinks you killed this woman, Martha Huber or something. The disrespect.
Yeah.
She is dead. Have some respect, Bethany.
But he does continue to defend himself and proclaim his innocence. But Beth says that she fell in love with him before he was proclaimed innocent, and to remember that she'll always be on his side. As if to say, like, hun, I don't care if you did kill her.
That's basically what she was saying. She's right? Like, I fell in love with you before I knew about Martha, so I don't care.
But that's where her story ends for this episode. And then finally, we've got Gabby's story. So Gabby and Carlos are in a meeting room with a bunch of suits, signing papers that guarantee that they won't sue the hospital and the hospital won't seek out the other family, even though I thought this was already in motion. But maybe not.
Well, yeah, but now they've got to sign the contract.
However, Gabby doesn't want to sign. She is extremely distraught about the whole situation, but she does agree to sign the papers so that the other mother, not to be mistaken with Coraline's other mother.
Yeah, not to be mistaken with Terry Hatcher.
Yes. Doesn't have to feel the same pain that she does.
This season is about to destroy Gabby. Like, you have, guy, if you've not seen season 7, if you've not finished it, you have no idea the destruction that Gabrielle Solis is about to go through. And Mark Cherry really just wanted to take Eva Longoria down a peg, didn't he? Let's face it.
But it's so well done.
Oh, it's...
It's something that's been building since season 1 and 2.
I genuinely think that season 7 is up there as one of my favourites. The writing can be a little bit patchy at times, but overall, I base my decision on what my favourite season is per my favourite character and what they go through. And Gabby has a lot to do with season 7 and season 8, and so that's why I think season 7 is up there as one of my favourite seasons.
But we'll have to talk about this stuff later, so let's focus on this episode.
Yeah.
The next day, Gabby and Susan are shopping for dresses when a little girl mistakenly runs up to Gabby calling her mummy. And, like, kudos to her real mum if she thinks Gabby's her mum. Like, what a compliment.
Right? They were both very stunning, and I liked the fact that they dressed them similarly as well. Obviously, because the child's going to confuse them. So, but it was a nice little touch to have them both in a red dress and to both be a woman of colour and to both, you know, have their long, brown, kind of flowing-y hair, similar hairstyles. But Gabby's starting to lose it, and it's very sad.
Yeah, I mean, to cut a long story short, the mum eventually escapes with her daughter after Gabby keeps asking about her age and her birthday and where she was born.
Yeah, she was yelling, like, where was it Fairview Hospital or Fairview Memorial?
Coming across as a bit of a nutcase while Susan's changing.
In the middle of a mall.
She then looks around and notices every single little girl in the shop who could be around the age, and we cut to Wisteria Lane, and Gabby is talking about this with Bob, seeking out his help. She gives him some detail, and Bob says that he'll do his best to help. Gabby then lies and says that Carlos is fully on board with this. She's hired Bob to help find the family.
Yeah, Bob basically says there's a PI that he works with, so you can contact them. But it also comes out in this scene that Gabby knows more than the hospital.
So Bob calls later and says that he's found them, but once the call is made, it will change their family forever and it can't be undone. Like, this decision will have consequences, you know, like in a game.
Yeah, like in Until Dawn or something.
But with a deep sigh and a look at Juanita in the distance, she tells Bob to make the call. She then invites Juanita into her room and does a makeover with her, and they have a really nice moment of just talking and Gabby saying that she loves Juanita to the moon and back no matter what happens.
It's very selfish. Gabby's very selfish in this moment, but this must be so hard for her. I can't imagine what she feels right now. And yeah, I don't know how I would react. I'd probably react in a similar way to Gabby, to be fair, if I was in this situation.
Yeah, and I get what you mean. I absolutely can't judge. I'm not a mum. I don't have a child. I don't have a child that I've birthed, and I don't know. I can't imagine. So I can see her and Carlos's sides in this episode quite well. How they differ, but neither is the wrong decision, so to speak.
Yeah.
Although it seems like Gabby was talked into it, even though she really didn't want to do it.
No, well, yeah, that is established at the end, really, isn't it? Her story, so we'll get to that.
You can tell right at the start.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So Bob then goes to Carlos and says that he's called the family and he just needs to talk to him and Gabby about it. With Carlos not having a clue what he's talking about.
No, he's like, what do you mean? He always does that as well when he's confused. He holds on to the first syllable of the first word that he says in the line. He'll go, what do you mean?
Yeah. Inside, Gabby and Juanita are doing a fake runway with Juanita walking in her makeup and her dress.
Queen, hold the world in contempt.
Right? And then Carlos just comes in and ruins it.
I know, fucking ruining everything.
So they send out Juanita, and then they argue about the whole situation. Carlos asks what happens if the other family want Juanita back, which Gabby clearly didn't think of. And Carlos says that if this ends badly, he'll never forgive her.
Yeah. I mean it, Gabrielle. We're done.
The stakes are high.
Yeah. But it is officially stated in this scene that Carlos didn't really give Gabby the opportunity to think about how she wanted to handle this situation, and he just kind of told her that she needed to sign that piece of paper to protect Juanita, which, yeah. I know Carlos overall is probably thinking about Juanita more than anything else, but it's harder for Gabby to disassociate from her biological child when she's the one that carried the biological child, and now she knows full well that the girl that she's hugging isn't really the biological child that she thought she had. On top of the fact that Gabby was told that she couldn't have children, and so Juanita was kind of like the miracle baby.
Yeah, and you can still see that she has that love for Juanita, and it's not changed in that way.
No.
Which is nice.
It is nice, yeah. But Carlos makes a valid point. You know, the other family could find out and say, okay, we want our children, our child back.
Yes.
And swap them.
So the episode ends with Mary A talking about happiness and being something that everyone searches for. We see Susan pull up and look longingly at her house. Bree in her kitchen with Mary Alice talking about making a new friend, assuming that they mean Keith.
Yeah.
Yeah. Renee drinking a cocktail in her yard with hopes of defeating her competition. Lynette and Tom in their front yard spending time with the kids. And Mary Alice implying that their happiness was there the whole time.
Yes.
So let's move on to our next segment where Joel's going to give the gayest and the straightest moment of the episode. So what do you have for the gayest moment?
My award for gayest moment goes to the cocktail cardigan.
Oh my god.
Yeah, it's just a cardigan. But if you put a fancy word in front of it, the gays and the girls, like the fashion gays and the fashion girlies, they go wild. This isn't a dress. This is a, I don't know, like a
cocktail dress.
A lamp dress. This is a light lamp dress. And they're like, oh my god, it's new. It's innovative. Fashion. Oh, must have. Must have.
Funny enough, you're kind of pointing out the M&S tactic of advertising. Like, this isn't just pie.
It's M&S pie.
Remember that?
Yeah, I do. I'm not sure if M&S is anywhere else but the UK. So yeah, it's an advert. YouTube it, guys. YouTube some M&S adverts and you will see a pattern.
Yeah. And then what do you have for the straightest moment?
So my award for the straightest moment goes to Keith.
Which time?
Which time? That should tell you everything you need to know, guys. For when he's called over by Bree and then he goes, I wasn't doing anything important. Oh, yeah. Fucking
rude.
Right. Rude, straight bullshit right there. Wasn't doing anything important. Fuck you, Keith. Vanessa Williams. Like, how dare you?
It is rather laddie.
It is very laddie.
Yeah.
So now we move on to BET Awards for Best and Worst Parent. So who do you have for the best parent?
My award for...
Best Parent of the Episode.
We're going to give it to Gabby for the runway moment with Juanita.
Okay.
And all the, you know, the touching talk.
Yeah.
It was nice. Okay. Yeah, love you to the moon and back.
Okay. A little bit controversial. Brave. That is a brave choice. Okay. So who do you have for the worst parent?
My award for...
Worst Parent of the Episode.
Now, it was quite tough to decide, but I gave it to Lynette for being a sucky wife and a sucky person in this episode. I mean, her methods worked, and Tom did end up appreciating his children more, but the methods sucked.
Yeah.
And so in principle, I had to give it to her in principle.
Fair.
Like, you're not setting a good example.
No, I get it. Even though she thinks she is, and she argues that she is, but
she
not,
thinks that she is because of the outcome, but the ends don't always justify the means.
Well, yeah, that, and she doesn't want her kids seeing their dad stoned.
Oh God! So all of that's just aged poorly.
Do you have a favourite line? Let me guess, it's the Renee one, isn't it?
I have never seen so many sweater sets. That was awesome.
That was
or
a good
possibly.
Line.
That did give me pause.
I'll admit, that gave me pause. Yeah, I think that's my favourite line.
Or even possibly, he's a real lady killer.
Oh, no, actually, I think my favourite line is, hold the word in contempt.
Yeah.
What does that even mean? I mean, it's nothing.
No. So, that was season 7, episode 3, Truly Content.
It was true content.
Yeah. So, if anyone wants to find us, if they have any questions, queries, comments and theories, where can they do so?
You can find us on Instagram at boyfriendsreview.
We also have email, which is boyfriendsreview@outlook.com. And all of the artwork is done by our friend Louis, who you can find at DocRedMonkDesign on Instagram. And there's a link to his Etsy page.
And at the point of recording, it is his 31st birthday tomorrow. So happy birthday, DocRedMonk, Louis.
Happy birthday.
Right.
Don't forget to leave us a review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you are listening to us, and we will see you next time with Season 7, Episode 4, The Thing That Counts Is What's Inside.
What a title.
Yeah.
Okay, see you then, guys.
See you then.
Bye.
Bye.